Today is March 8, 2017, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Philip Alexio in Washington. Coming up, the Russia controversy continues to be a distraction for the Trump White House as Congress remains divided on what type of investigation to pursue.
I think the smartest and most deliberative way to address the situation is to ask the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, who are already in the process of looking into this, to look into this and other leaks of classified information.
Also ahead, Brussels threatening penalties as EU states fail to resettle refugees. It's International Women's Day with celebrations and festivities and recognition around the world. And the power goes out in the Statue of Liberty. What's up with that? It's all on today's International Edition. Well, aides to President Donald Trump continue to defend his recent Twitter outburst that accused former President Barack Obama of wiretapping his phones in Trump Tower during last year's presidential campaign. Obama has denied the allegation, as has the former director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. Now, Trump's accusation is the latest twist in a long-running saga of unanswered questions about links between the Trump campaign and Russia during last year's election. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
President Trump surprised a group of tourists at the White House Tuesday as public tours resumed for the first time in several weeks. But in the press briefing room, Trump spokesman Sean Spicer remained on the defensive over the president's recent Twitter blast that accused former President Barack Obama of tapping his phones in Trump Tower. Spicer was asked if there was any evidence to back up President Trump's claim.
I think the smartest and most deliberative way to address the situation is to ask the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, who are already in the process of looking into this, to look into this and other leaks of classified information.
Obama has denied Trump's allegation, and so has former Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper.
There was no wiretap against Trump Tower during the campaign conducted by any part of the National Intelligence Community.
Trump has demanded an investigation in his claims involving Obama, but there are plenty of questions about that, says legal analyst Alan Morrison.
Well, the first question is not a legal question. It's a factual question. Is there any basis for it? And so far, there has been no evidentiary basis other than suspicion. And suspicion is not enough to start an investigation.
Congressional intelligence committees and the FBI have begun probing possible links between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. But Democrats, including Senator Dianne Feinstein, favor a broader, independent investigation.
It's vitally important that the American people have trust in this investigation, and that there is not even the appearance of a conflict of interest or political influence.
It's too early for that, says Republican Senator Chuck Grassley.
There are times when special counsels are appropriate, but it's far too soon to tell at this time.
The Russia controversy has become a major political distraction for the Trump White House, as has the president's continued use of Twitter, says Republican strategist John Fearon.
It's not clear to me whether this is part of a concerted strategy or it's just who he is. It's also not clear if he's going to settle down or if this is the new normal that we all have to acclimate ourselves with.
In the meantime, official Washington will be closely scrutinizing statements both from the Trump White House and from the president's Twitter account. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
All right, on now to some interesting things going on in the world of online, cyberspace, all that sort of stuff. Andrew Palcheski is here, and we got a couple of things that happening. We've got International Women's Day. That must be a pretty hot topic.
Oh, for sure. It's
and then we got another one, but we'll hold off on that.
We'll get to that. First, International Women's Day, of course, a huge topic around the world, that hashtag being used across social media. It's also hashtag Be Bold for Change, which is the theme of this year's International Women's Day. And we're seeing social media profile a number of famous women who have made contributions to society. And we're seeing a lot of women wearing red to mark the day. That's the color of today. So if you see a lot of women wearing red wherever you are, that's because they're marking, most likely, International Women's Day. We're also seeing another hashtag, though, hashtag a day without a woman. And this is kind of come out of International Women's Day as part of the kind of protest originating with the Women's March the day after the inauguration here in the U.S., where women have said they're not going to go to work today to show how important they are to the society and the economy. They're not going to be purchasing anything. They're not going to be spending any money to show the influence that women have on the economy. But it's not a privilege that's enjoyed universally. Some women are hourly wage workers, and that's created some criticism. People saying, well, not everyone can participate in this. Some people's livelihoods don't allow them to take a day off to protest. So a little bit of back and forth on that, but you may also see some fewer women in the workplace today. Because
interesting. I mean, there wasn't a lot of traffic coming in. Did you notice coming into work anything? Or
I walk to work, so I...
Okay, so no traffic at all. Maybe the streets are quiet.
I have seen, though, out on the streets and the sidewalks, women wearing red today, so I have seen that in action.
So what's going on over there in New York? Lights going out with the Statue of Liberty?
Yeah, one of the most famous women certainly depicted as a statue in New York Harbor, going dark for more than an hour last night after an unexpected power failure. And this set social media off, people wondering why this was. A lot of people questioning if it was a protest or over the immigration ban or something to do with International Women's Day. Well, it turns out it was a faulty lighting equipment. The power went out because of that. It was as routine as a power outage can be, but people still saying that the symbolism of a woman and of an immigrant or a symbol of immigrants going dark in the midst of the immigration ban being issued by President Trump, saying it's very symbolic.
Interesting. Symbolic. Lights going out. Statue of Liberty. International.
Cloaked in darkness.
It's also coincidental.
Created a lot of cool pictures, though, too. A lot of people taking eerie photos of the Statue of Liberty, just the silhouette and the sunset. It was kind of cool.
Interesting. All right, Andrew Pachowski, thanks a lot. We got more coming tomorrow. Stick around. This is International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, armed insurgents disguised as doctors attacked Afghanistan's largest military hospital in the capital, Kabul, killing at least 30 people and wounding dozens more. China's foreign minister has warned that the United States and North Korea are on a collision course, citing rising tensions on the Korean Peninsula. Does the U.S. have the ability to secure classified information? Does anybody? After the most recent bombshell dump by WikiLeaks, and the South Korean courts will be ruling Friday on Park's impeachment. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are all on voanews.com. Follow us on International Edition on voanews.com.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory is preparing to send an ice chest-sized experiment to the International Space Station that will produce the coolest spot in the universe. Called the Cold Atom Laboratory, or CAL, the experiment is a suite of instruments that include lasers, a vacuum chamber, and an electromagnetic knife. CAL's instruments have been designed to freeze atoms of gas down to just a billionth of a degree above absolute zero. That's minus 273.15 degrees Celsius, which scientists say is more than 100 million times colder than what can be found in deep space. It's thought that the CAL experiment could help improve various technologies such as sensors, quantum computers, and atomic clocks that spacecraft use for navigation. It could also provide new insight into dark energy, which scientists theorize comprises 68% of the universe. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Okay, well, the group that organized January's Women's March, we just talked about it a moment ago here in Washington, D.C., they've been calling for women to take the day off Wednesday to show their economic value. But listen, the event, dubbed by organizers as a day without women, has been coinciding with the day, the International Women's Day, and everything else like that. But several public schools, they've been in on the action in the U.S., closing classrooms today after teachers said they would skip school to participate in the strike. And of course, there are hundreds, maybe thousands of events planned around the world for today, including an all-female kickboxing tournament in Toronto, a 10K fun run in Brisbane, Australia that will see 10,000 women running through the city streets, and a literature festival in Dubai centered on gender equality. Now, in Kenya, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres met with President Uhuru Kenyatta. And while at a press conference there, Guterres said the best way to protect and empower women is to give them a full priority in society.
And I've seen women as the great victims of poverty, of conflict, and violations of human rights in different parts of the world. The protection of women in these circumstances is absolutely essential. But I believe that the only way to make that protection effective is to give full priority to the empowerment of women, to give full priority to the massive presence of women in government institutions, in political systems, in the business community, in the boards of companies, and in peace negotiations, in all aspects in which societies are today developing. I do believe that with a full presence of women in our societies, development will be stronger, peace will be more easy to maintain, human rights will also be better protected.
Secretary Guterres has been visiting countries in Africa and has already seen or been to Somalia. And standing by Kenyatta, he urged the international community to step in to help the horrid situation in that country that has been in conflict, suffers from drought, disease, and famine.
I think that we need to also to look into Somalia as a land in which there is an opportunity. With the new leadership that was elected, with the improved security situation in the country, even if a lot of challenges still remain, this is the moment for the international community to massively invest in Somalia. First of all, addressing the tragedy of the drought. People are dying. This must stop. The international community must act now, must be mobilized to support the Somali people in this very difficult situation. But this is also the moment to support the government to build capacity, to collect taxes, to develop its own security architecture, to guarantee that there is a state functioning in Somalia.
The UN Secretary General on his first travel trip since taking office in January. Well, top legal scholars say the fight for South Africa to stay in the International Criminal Court is just beginning, a day after the government officially revoked its notice of intent to withdraw from the War Crimes Court. That decision came after a South African court ruled last month that the notice given by South Africa's cabinet was unconstitutional and the matter needs to go through Parliament. At the time, legal activists praised the ruling because they said it showed South Africa's commitment to follow proper procedures. But retired Constitutional Court Justice Zach Yacoub says this is a hollow victory. He says, quote, "That's not a victory for us ultimately," he said Wednesday, during a news conference at which a top group of international jurists, including six retired members of South Africa's Constitutional Court, presented a submission to South Africa's parliament to remain in the International Criminal Court. Yacoub said that it doesn't matter. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter because substantial terms whether we leave the process by not having followed the proper process or whether we leave having followed the improper, doing it the wrong way. It says, I suppose the first is marginally worse, but in the end, our view is that whether we follow it or not, leaving will have catastrophic international consequences. The ruling African National Congress, however, holds a strong majority and is firmly in favor of leaving. South Africa announced its intent to leave the court in 2015 after a disagreement with the court over the government's refusal to act on an ICC arrest warrant for Sudan President Omar al-Bashir during an African Union summit he attended in Johannesburg. Well, four of the top five ranked women's soccer football teams in the world wrapped up a friendly week-long round-robin tournament in the United States called the She Believes Cup. The consensus among the teams, top-ranked USA, number 2 Germany, number 3 France, and number 5 England, was that playing three games in 7 days was not an easy task. Well, VOA's Park Brewer was at the field last night at RFK Stadium and has this report.
The home fans showed up on a rainy night hoping to see the U.S. women's soccer team defend their title in this event that was first played in the United States last year. The U.S. took on France after Germany beat England 1-0 earlier Tuesday, so the Americans needed a win over France to take the title. But it was not long before France took the advantage. Eugenie Le Sommer was taken down in the box and a penalty kick was awarded. Camille Abelie stepped up to the spot and converted to give the French a 1-0 lead. If that weren't enough of a shock to the partisan crowd, less than 2 minutes later, Le Sommer scored to make it 2-0. Abelie added a second-half goal to make the final 3-0, giving France the title.
We are really happy because we know it's really hard to beat US in USA. So it's a great game we did, but we just want to keep going, and it's really important for us to win this tournament.
U.S. defender Julie Johnson said it was not the result they wanted.
Extremely disappointed, obviously, but we're here to grow and learn. You know, we want to have as many tools as we can in order to grow and test ourselves, and these are the teams that you want to test yourselves with.
The defeat left the U.S. team in last place, and on home soil they had to watch the French celebrate their She Believes title. Mark Brewer, VOA News, Washington.
And you are listening to International Edition.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Well, the European Union is warning it could start taking action against member states if they continue to refuse to participate in the bloc's refugee relocation plan. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, only two countries, Finland and Malta, have met their obligations under the program, while tens of thousands of refugees remain stranded in southern European states.
The European Union approved a plan to relocate refugees stranded in Italy and Greece across the bloc in 2015, but the latest figures show member countries have accepted just 8% of the 160,000 refugees they promised to resettle. Brussels has warned it will accept no more excuses.
Our union is based on two principles: solidarity and responsibility. These words are not solely moral values. They are legal, binding principles enshrined in the treaties.
Hungary is among the countries that have refused to take any resettled refugees.
If you damage the fence, cross illegally, or attempt to cross, is counted to be a crime in Hungary.
It has begun reinforcing its border fence with Serbia, part of a crackdown on migration. Human rights groups accuse Hungary of criminalizing legitimate refugees and physically abusing migrants, a charge the government denies. The EU could take Hungary to the European Court of Justice to attempt to force compliance. But Brussels has other options, says research fellow Camino Mortera Martinez, who spoke to VOA via Skype.
So instead of like going directly after a country which is not complying with EU law, you can try to use some other tools to force them into complying, for example, by withdrawing some of the budgets.
But that could backfire at a time when populist opposition to the EU is high.
To me, the political consequence of forcing countries at the moment to take in refugees is very clear. It's a very clear search on anti-EU sentiment.
Faced with that dilemma, Europe is desperate to halt the flow of migrants. Germany is among the European states speeding up the deportation of failed asylum seekers. Analysts say German leader Angela Merkel is taking a tougher line before elections scheduled for September.
Because migration, even before the euro issue, is the most important problem we have in Europe right now, an obstacle to further integration and a danger for the internal security situation in Europe.
The EU estimates there are between 700,000 and 1 million migrants waiting in Libya. Calmer seas in recent days saw a surge in numbers trying to cross the Mediterranean, with nearly 1,000 rescued by the Italian Coast Guard last Thursday. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
All right, Henry, thanks. Well, interesting news in our science and health tabs up here. You'll be interested to know that researchers are developing a blood test that can tell not only whether someone has cancer, but in what organ the tumors are lurking. Now, the test could mean more prompt, potentially life-saving treatment for patients. Researchers describe their blood test as a kind of dual authentication process. It's able to detect the presence of dying tumor cells in blood, as well as tissue signatures to signal to clinicians which organ is affected by the cancer. There already are tests that screen for traces of DNA released by dying cancer cells, and such blood tests show promise in the treatment of patients to see how well anti-cancer therapies are working. But researchers at the University of California, San Diego, discovered a new clue using organ-specific DNA signatures that leads them to the particular organ that's affected. The finding makes the new blood test potentially useful as a screening tool in people suspected of having cancer. So the test screens for a DNA signature called CpG, it's sort of unique for the each tissue in the body. You'll never remember the name. But when cancer grows in an organ, it competes with healthy tissues for nutrients and space, killing off the healthy cells, which release their DNA into the bloodstream. That's a look at the news today. I'm Philip Alexiou. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find more at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is in the midst of its most severe drug epidemic since the 1980s. Nonetheless, the country is positioning itself within the international system to fight it, thanks to close cooperation with its international partners and with mechanisms created over the past decades to fight drug trafficking, said Assistant Secretary for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs William Brownfield. He spoke at a press conference to introduce the congressionally mandated 2017 International Narcotics Control Strategy Report, submitted annually by the State Department. The report describes the efforts of key countries to attack all aspects of the international drug trade. This year's report, said Assistant Secretary Brownfield, is a story of 40 years of building capabilities, intelligence, coordination, specialized units, new laws, and relationships around the world. So, for example, the United States and Mexico have developed cooperative mechanisms, coordination, joint operations, and intelligence sharing that have improved the ability of both countries to address the issue of drug trafficking across the U.S.-Mexico border. We are better positioned to deal with it today, as this annual report demonstrates, because we have mechanisms cooperation, said Assistant Secretary Brownfield. We have regional groupings. We have equipment and technology. We have specialized units. We have legislation and statutes on the books in more than 100 different countries that allow us to address the issue internationally, multinationally, regionally, and bilaterally among governments. It is much better that we are confronting this situation, this historic opioid crisis today, with the architecture that we have in place now than it would have been 20 years ago, he said. I believe we have a good strategy. I believe this international drug report lays out a good global architecture for more than 100 nations of the world to cooperate and work together to address the drug issue.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.